You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman, we always resisted and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotel family, hope everything is well for you today. Hope you're going to have a great weekend. Hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it's not, and it has to get done, you will get it done. Because you always persevere. And that's why we love you. That's right. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcasts. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that. And then there will be programs that are dated and titled. And it has been updated. Thanks to my good brother, Kwaku. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Once again, this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. On Monday, Monday evenings, Acres of Diamonds public affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Jihad Ahmed from 6 to 8. Followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. That is followed from 9 to 10, Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Melanin Live with Chief Lance Jones and Sister Benisiwa Ayan from 7 to 9. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 8 p.m. on Fridays. On Saturdays, from 4 to 6 on Saturdays, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then also on Saturdays, from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. And then on Sundays, once again, it's time for an awakening at 7 p.m. on Sunday with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. Remember, go online to WeBuyBlack.com and donate. We're going to establish a supermarket here in the Atlanta area. I know, that's ridiculous. We don't have a supermarket. All these millions of folks here in this metro area, and we got to go to Kroger's and Publix and whatever else. But that's going to happen. WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans, Brother Bomani Tayemba, who has been taking our people to the motherland, and he's got some trips upcoming. Go online, because everything you need is online. You can check out all the upcoming trips and all the things that you need. All the information is necessary. That is all right there for you. But if you want to give Brother Bomani a call, give him a call at 404-931-9429. That's 404-931-9429. If you want to see photos, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. Baba Rinoco, he does have something coming up. I don't have that information. Of course, his tours this year have been postponed
but he's been doing a lot of Zoom calls. And so for continuing to educate our people, Baba Rinoko Rashidi. Habashaw, HabashawIncorporated.org. Habashaw stands for helping Africans by establishing schools at home and abroad. Habashaw, Habashaw Works. The mission, of course, is Habashaw is a Pan-African organization that cultivates leadership in youth and families through practical experiences in cultural education, sustainable agriculture, entrepreneurship, holistic health, and technology. Habashaw Incorporated, and their projects, their programs are Habashaw Works, Black to Our Roots, Sustainable Seeds, Golden Growers, and the Urban Green Jobs. And of course, the Kashi Project in Ghana is moving right along. That's HabashawIncorporated.org. Go online and check them out. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar here in the Atlanta area, in the west end of Atlanta. Outstanding smoothies and vitality drinks and other pastries and soups and so forth. That's Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. The Shrine of the Black Madonna is open. That's right down the street, by the way, right across the street from Soul Veg. The Shrine of the Black Madonna is open on Fridays and Saturdays from 1 to 7 during the month of February. And I'm quite sure they might start doing it more as, you know, things are opening up. The Meadow Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall here in the Atlanta area, if you're in the Atlanta area off of Georgia Highway 166, is the Greenbrier Mall. And in the Greenbrier Mall is the Meadow Bookstore. And Mama Nia has a new location in the Greenbrier Mall, a bigger location. And give her a call if you're looking for a book or whatever at 404-346-3263. That's 404-346-3263. And she's the finest selection of postcards, greeting cards, certificates, T-shirts, you name it, she has it. The Meadow Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. The other bookstore we promote is the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia, that is east of Atlanta. And the number to call, Brother Gazemde Ajamu, and they have a coffee bar now serving delicious Cameroon Boyo. It's 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. The Ledge Group, land for the environmental development of group economics. That's what the Ledge Group stands for. That's what Ledge stands for. And believe me, they are doing work on the continent in the area of food, water, clothing, and shelter for our people. Over 12 projects, over 6 countries, 170 employed, and over 260 members. Become a member of the Ledge Group. Go online, the Ledge Group.com, theledgegroup.com. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People in the Spirit of Ujamaa. Their Thursday night broadcast last night from 9 to 10 every Thursday night on blogtalkradio.com. That's blogtalkradio.com/ULU. The name of the program is Dare to Win. And that's every Thursday night from 9 to 10. If you want to call just to listen, you can do so. Or if you have questions, comments, or concerns, you dial 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People in the Spirit of Ujamaa Cooperative Economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Sun Goddess Sense. That's right, Sun Goddess Sense, your one-stop natural shop located at 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia. It's a little suburb of Atlanta here. And inside the International Discount Mall, and it's booth number 225. Okay, for more information, you can contact Sister Shelley at 404-434-7963. They have an array of things to offer. You know, if you want to get your beard looking all groomy and so forth and glistening, they got the gel for that. All kinds of stuff. Incense, candles, T-shirts, all right there at the Sun Goddess Sense, your one-stop natural shop in the International Mall on Jonesboro Road. Gabriel Aurelia with the Sanjay Dash. Haiti.org, Sister Gabby has been doing outstanding work with the young. You just go online, man, and check that out, the beautiful children that they're serving. Because they're doing work in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti, which has been devastating since the earthquake, and it's even more so. The people in the rural areas probably get nothing, and they're doing great work of feeding them. They got a educational program, a health program, a sustainable agricultural program, as well as an entrepreneurial program. So go online, Sonjay, SONJAY-HAITI.org, Sonjay-Haiti. And, of course, Baba Baruti with Akabin Institute. Make your check or money order out to Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. Or you can use Cash App or PayPal. If you use Cash App, the dollar sign, YAA, the letter M, and then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I, to make donations to the great work that the brothers and sisters are doing. Also, too, you know Baba Baruti's a prolific writer. So if you have any idea of the books that you'd like to check out, go to AkabinHouse.com, AkabinHouse.com. All right. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. I'm going to read these three, and then I'm going to introduce my guest who has been on the program. Hasn't been on a while, but we're glad that he's with us, and that is Brother Akil Parker. So, the Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. February 18th. You cannot orchestrate survival, the first law of intelligence, while you are engaged in acts of genocide. Kepra Kara Camus. For warriors, power should be defined as the ability to create a reality which is fundamentally and irrevocably African in spirit and action, and therefore actively removes enemies. This should be more than some theoretically abstract, ideologically nebulous quality of these dedicated servants of the people. A power definitely should not be subject to ever weakening qualifications which are disempowering, ahistorical, and whitewashed by derationalized sub-simulationists, escapist fantasies, qualifications which turn power into something which requires neither action nor evidence to claim. Only compromise. Treacherous minds are unable to comprehend that in order to be powerful, power must be exercised. Minds in denial of this connection believe that they have lost all wars against them and therefore defend their powerlessness. To hide their self-sustaining inferiority, they will naturally act as if its a pretense is real. They naturally fabricate and engage in ongoing, easy, unrighteous, irrelevant games to distract themselves and their followers from the abundance of evidence of their actual powerlessness. The bulk of their energies will go toward assisting our enemies through contributing to our chaos, misdirection, and a weakening of the true, logical, timeless, undebatable definition of power as an uncompromised exercise to that of a mere pretense. In fact, to nothing more than a joke relative to the actions of those who continue to do the real work of destroying us. Affirm, I am not suicidal. Affirm, I am not suicidal. Let me add this as an addendum of what power is. Power is not politics. Power is not money. Power is not educational information. You get no power from these things. What is power? The clinical psychologist, Dr. Wade Nobles, I think has the most definitive definition. He said, power is the ability to define reality. Then he further states, and then have others accept your definition as if it's their own. Europeans impose their culture on the world. They set the definitions. They exercise power. And they made others accept their definition as if it's their own. The question we as African people need to ask ourselves is, who are we in Europeans' definitions? First, we were the soulless people, no culture to speak of, justifying our captivity. Then, of course, we were the scourge in society, the no-fit fathers, the no-fit mothers, the drug addicts, the drug dealers, lazy. That's the reality. That is the reality in Europeans' mind. What is our definition? We must shape reality in our image and in our interests. Power is the ability to define reality. And I don't want to impose our reality on no one. So the second part of that definition, I just want us to define it in our image and in our interest. Define reality for us. February 19th. We should allow no one to turn our heads. If we continually try to escape our identity in the forms of others, we will surely not find our destiny. Man's destiny is a reflection of himself. We must be about the task of fortifying our ancient beliefs and traditional customs. It is only through this effort that strength is given. Nana Dzinzulu. Pure and simple, our destiny is to be African. Let me repeat. Pure and simple, our destiny is to be African. Our calling as original civilizing human beings who are charged by divinity to bring and maintain righteous order on this planet. It is to return to who we naturally are as a direct dynamic reflection of that divinity. And it is our obligation and duty as a people of power to forever act on that naturalist without compromise. It is our obligation and duty as a people of power to do so without fear of violation from others. It is our obligation and duty as a people of power to pursue this objective without apprehension about whatever aliens may think about us. None of our empowering undertakings can succeed without us actually doing the work of fortifying our ancient beliefs and traditional customs. For us, there should be no other path. For we are here to intimidate no one. Knowing this, no one should ever again be able to turn our heads from this divinely sanctioned destiny. Given that we remain at war for our survival and sanity against a determined, well-experienced, evasive species, we know that this process will neither be easy nor unprotracted. Given history's more than ample evidence that our enemies cannot tolerate us, not being tethered to their oppression, exploitation, and lies, we know that nothing less than absolute sovereignty can make our true destiny as Africans a possibility. Nothing less than absolute sovereignty. Affirm, I am a studied, engaged reflection of my ancestors. Affirmed, I am a studied, engaged reflection of my ancestors. Some people stop and stand back and stare since I decided to let my mother's natural hair style my hair. Let me say that again. Some people stop, stand back, and stare since I decided to let Mother Nature style my hair. Sharon Goodman. We never had to make our women beautiful. We never had to diminish other women in order to elevate the obvious. They have always been incomparable. We never had to lie and misdefine the divine along empty, shapeless, stringy, diseased lines in order to convince others that they are something that they are not. We never had to announce their presence, their authenticity, their cleanliness, their decency, their physique, their inner and outer glow. Everything always stopped upon their arrival to observe the purest definition of beauty. Their mere existence announced. Their mere existence announced just who they are. In fact, to be perfectly honest, African women are the most divine expression of our humanity. Their eyes are the deepest mirrors to our resistance against trauma. the humanity we refuse to relinquish, and the resilience of our love for our people and each other. Reverence and adoration are inadequate expressions of the heartfelt appreciation, real, true, remembering, visionary African men feel for those who compliment us in ways beyond our historical words. No other touch has brought us through these ages with a nurturing understanding of our determination to attend the pyramid's apex, as well as our stumbling within the desecrated valley. No other should ever be in our view, possessing our desire, unless we fall into a mental-sidal preference for less. Let me repeat that. No other woman should ever be in our view, possessing our desire, unless we fall into a mental-sidal preference for less. None deserve our respect or utmost appreciation for being the beauty of who we naturally are. They are the greatest gifts which we could ever hope to achieve and receive. And humbly, we are grateful. Ashe. Affirm, I revere the natural beautiful of African women. Affirm, I revere the natural beauty of African women. Ashe. The Nyasasem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. And I got a few things I got to announce here before I relinquished this to our guest, Brother Akil Parker. I know that one of them very quickly is it's going to be on Tuesday, the 23rd, the 25th annual Lester Velt Middleton lecture series. You know, ASCAC a couple of weeks ago, one of the brothers paid a tribute to Brother Lester Velt Middleton. Lester Velt Middleton has done some outstanding work on YouTube. Go to YouTube. His interviews with our warrior scholars, Dr. Clark, Dr. Ben, Joseph Ben Jokanen, Ivan Van Sertema, you name it, he's interviewed him, Brother Lester Velt Middleton. The activist, the cultural activist, Dr. Joy Hardiman, she's out of Seattle, good sister. She's on the ASCAC board, the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilization. She's putting together this in partnership with the Comedic Institute of Health and Human Development. And it's going to be the 23rd at 7 p.m. This is an Eventbrite, okay? Eventbrite.com/E/ Lester Velt Middleton Lecture Series. To get the tickets, you must register, okay? And let me see what else. Right, there she is. Okay. Mama Nabantu, remember she was on this past Wednesday about the Pan-African Federalist Movement. The conference is tomorrow. To go to Zoom and jot down here the ID. The ID number, 860-7929-4921. That's 860-7929-4921. And the password is PAFMMA. PAFMMA. So, Mama Nabantu,
Greetings. A text to make it easier. All folks have to do is click on our link and it'll take you straight to the flyer. And you click the flyer, it takes you straight to registration.
Okay.
It makes it so much easier.
Good. Okay, because we want people to join us tomorrow for the Pan-African Federalist Movement. And what time is it?
It's at 6:45.
6:45.
Right. If you can read off the link, I just put it on your text.
Okay.
That's the website. I'm sorry. Go straight to the website, and you'll see the flyer. It will be the first thing they see is the flyer. And when you click on the flyer, it'll take you to registration, and that will give you that will give you the Zoom link.
All right. I'll announce that again. Okay.
All right. All right. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Mama Nabantu of the Pan-African Federalist Movement. She's the chair here in Atlanta. We're having a meeting here. And, of course, the North American chair is my good brother, Brother Mawali Mu out of Emstada, out of Florida.
Let's see, where else? I got another announcement before I get there. Yes. Brother Elliot of Time for an Awakening, the State of the African Town is going to be tomorrow. The State of African Town program is going to be tomorrow from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific Time. The State of African Town. And there is a registration. They're going to deal with issues. It's a total program that's going to happen. Education and youth, community peace and safety, business, economic development, arts and culture, housing and community development, policy and advocacy, health and wellness. These are the areas that are going to be covered from 1 to 4, and it's going to be on Time for an Awakening tomorrow. This conference will be, the address and the program will be airing on Time for an Awakening. So go to timeforanawakening.com tomorrow from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern, and the other times will coincide, so, you know, 10 to 3, 10 to 3 Central, and so forth. And but you adjust for that, and there will be this program on the State of the African Town 2021, the 8th Annual State of African Town Address 2021, and that's going to be happening tomorrow. And all you got to do, brothers and sisters, is go to timeforanawakening.com. And I'll announce that again, timeforanawakening.com. My guest, of course, is Brother Akil Parker. Brother Akil, how are you?
I'm doing well, Baba Oshie. How are you?
I'm doing well, son. What's been happening with you? Been okay?
Been okay. Been maintaining. Got some snow up here in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
But I'm staying close, doing my work.
Yeah. Are you doing virtual or are you in the classroom?
Well, I'm doing both. So in the night school program that I teach in, is we're virtual, you know, doing meetings on Google Meet. And but in my teaching at Cheney, our semester just started about 2 weeks ago. So I'm in person at Cheney University. So I'm traveling out there twice a week because I'm only teaching one class this semester. Last semester I was teaching two courses. So I was out there 5 days a week. But this semester, I'm only teaching one class. So we're out there trying to, you know, be safe, social distance.
Okay.
And, right on. You know, trying to do my work.
Now, where is Cheney State located in Pennsylvania? How far is that from Philadelphia?
So I live in North Philly. It takes me about an hour.
Okay.
Commute. It's in Delaware County, so it's like southwest of the city.
Okay.
It's, of course, if you keep going in that direction, you'll get to Lincoln. So Cheney is actually closer
to Lincoln University. Okay. Two historically American African universities or colleges.
Yeah, and there's an ongoing battle. There's been an ongoing battle over, like, who was the first HBCU.
Well, I always heard it was Cheney. I always heard it was Cheney.
Yeah, so, I mean, but it depends on what, again, like, you know, Wade Nobles, as you mentioned, Wade Nobles earlier in terms of power and the ability to form definitions. It depends on whose definition you accept.
Yeah.
People from Cheney will say that in 1837 it was founded, but it was the Institute of Colored Youth, which was located in South Philly. But it was the argument is that it was a high school at that point when it was at its initial founding.
Okay.
Then in 1845, I want to say 1845 or 1854. I know somebody from Lincoln is going to, you know, bite my head off for not knowing that date, but it was established as the Ashman Institute, which later was renamed after Abraham Lincoln. But it was initially a college when it started.
Okay.
You know, but, you know, it depends on who you ask. And then there are people at Wilberforce that claim that they're the first. I think mm-hmm. Wilberforce was in 1837, I want to say. No, not 1837. It was established. I don't know the date.
Okay.
I'll just say that. I don't know the date. Forgive me. But I think the argument there is that people disqualify them because they say it wasn't initially a historically black college. It converted to a historically black college or something like that. Something like that. I have to go back into that history.
Well, you know, who Wilberforce was?
Yeah, Wilberforce would be the abolitionist from Great Britain.
Right.
I want to say.
Right. He was
watching a lecture by Dr. Clark, and Dr. Clark commented on the fact that he didn't think that, you know, Wilberforce, like many of those liberal abolitionists from the 19th century, he didn't trust his motives. He didn't think
exactly.
He was sincere.
Exactly. You know? Well, you know, he was important.
He was a
captor of our people. And it was on that ship that he got this supposed revelation. And he wrote, you know, a song that I detest. I hate that damn song, Amazing Grace. And they always play that shit. I hate it. Number one, we're not wretches. We're not a wretch, you know, to save a wretch like me, you know. And I, but that's what came out of that. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's important to know about these people that, you know, these institutions are named after. Like, even, I mean, because there are a lot of people that, you know, probably graduated from Lincoln University. Like I graduated from Lincoln University I did my graduate work at Lincoln University. I did my undergraduate work at Morgan State down in Baltimore. But, you know, a lot of people do buy into and feed into and promote this narrative of Abraham Lincoln as the great emancipator, because somehow we always need a white man to save us, you know. And I think that a lot of the times, which is what we're going to talk about today, the Black History Month that many of us know and many of us are exposed to, it's the reason that it's so popular in the mainstream, at least in the mainstream, is so those type of narratives can be promoted. Mm-hmm. We can, you know, promote right. this type of multiculturalism, kumbaya, you know,
right.
Let's just focus on the so-called good white folks. But, you know, we're not supposed to talk about how Lincoln said himself he would have never ended slavery or put out the Emancipation Proclamation if he thought he could have maintained the Union without doing it.
Right.
You know.
And he's also said, he says, I've never been in favor of them being jurors or anything else. In fact, he said, if you're talking about a superior position, I, as much as any man, is in favor of having a superior position assigned to white folks. You know, he'd give less than a rat's ass, you know. And I know that Carter G. Woodson did not know this information when he established Negro History Week. That's why I never mention it when I talk about how the History Week started with Carter G. Woodson. He was honoring Frederick Douglass. And Frederick Douglass didn't know when his birthday was, but his mother said, you are my heart, you are my Valentine. So he chose February 14th to be his birthday. So he honored Frederick Douglass with Negro History Week in the month of February. And of course, in 1976, it became a month, you know, but I call it African and American African History Month, because we, you know, we only talk about the history here. Our history goes back from the time of beginning, you know, and that's what I want our people to understand. Our history didn't begin in our captivity. Our history began right. when nobody had history at all, you know?
Right.
Yeah. And that's what we need to learn, you know. Yes, we need to focus on accomplishments of our people and the struggle here. In fact, when you look at it, under tremendous odds did we invent a lot of things. Under tremendous odds did we do a lot of great things, you know. Segregation, racism, lynchings, mean-spiritedness, hatefulness, you name it. And yet, as what's the name said, and still we rise, you know? Yeah, and still we rise.
Yeah, I mean, I was reminded last night of Mama Marimba Ani's work, Yoruba.
I love it.
A book that, in all honesty, I've yet to finish it. I still need to finish that book. And I actually want to finish it, not only finish it, but create some study guides around.
Wow, that would be great. When you do that, let me know, and I'll let her know. You know, I say that the book is the Bible. It was one of the main books. I never forget when I first got it, and my copy is, although she's given me another copy since that time, because it was worn out. Because I read the religious component of it, you know, which is outstanding, of why they have to believe that their religion is historical and factual, as opposed to the myth that it is, you know. And how important it is for Caucasians to believe that, you know, and then impose it on others. Oh, it's a great work, man. Yes,
So what I was reminded of was, you know, that chapter she has on universalism,
like
the universe.
Right.
I was reading another book last night. I'm I've been kind of going down this rabbit hole, you know, getting into like get back into finance and economics, because that's what my training was in originally in undergraduate work. That's back in the day when, you know, I was a spy. I had bourgeois Negro aspirations, and I just wanted to get rich, go to Wall Street, and be an individualist. But you know, not to say that I don't want to acquire resources now, but the purpose is very different now.
Right,
it's about development, the collective. But I'm reading about Austrian economics, and an introduction to this book on Austrian economics. They get into how this economic revolution and which happened in 1870, and it's just, you know, when you look at the world through a certain lens, a certain worldview, when you read the writings of Europeans and how they so boldly just promote their own individual experience as if it's the experience of the entire universe and of the entire world, it just hits you, you know. But you have to have that filter, that type of filter to see that. Because a lot of times you'll say, oh, well, this is what happened, like this, or like this thing didn't happen until 1870. Or then you get into things like, you know, Newton's laws of motion, like as if this one white man in England can discover material realities about the universe, you know, about physics, you know, and like he has to discover it as if like people for thousands and thousands of years didn't understand and recognize this, you know, these types of things. But it's actually funny when you think about it. Especially when you recognize that, you know, there may have been times in the past when you didn't have that type of awareness, and you just kind of you go to school and you just like learn these things, and you just accept them as
right.
Okay, wow, that's what happened. You know, like when I was in middle school, learning about the Industrial Revolution, and I never took the time to think back then when I was like, you know, 11, 12 years old, that, wow, like, you know, where did they get the resources to just up and just, you know, just have this whole revolution and just start building factories and start mass producing products and whatnot. It never made the connection, and no teacher made the connection for me. And I never made the connection myself between, you know, the enslavement of our ancestors and all the capital that they were accumulating because of that. You know, and the connection to the Industrial Revolution, because it kind of just promotes this narrative of just the superiority and the supremacy of white folks. It's like, wow, right. Well, you know, they just up out of nowhere just started building factories in England. And then now today, when you have mainstream, you know, European or multinational institutions and organizations talking about Black History Month, it's as if, like, you know, those things, you know, either going to be swept under the rug, or it's like this whole idea of this internal conflict that, you know, the white society and the European community has had with itself from time immemorial. Like, you know, they knew they were doing the wrong thing, but they had to do the wrong thing to get to this point. And we should just, I guess, be thankful that all these things happened, because, like, we're all good now. And, That's one of the narratives that they, you know, try to promote with their version of Black History Month. This whole like idea that, well, it's cool because we're all Americans now. Yeah, that was unfortunate that your ancestors had to be enslaved, and there was a slave trade, and that was unfortunate. But, you know, but aren't you glad that you know you're here?
Right, and that's you know, their mindset is, you know, doesn't the ends justify the means? You know,
yeah.
See,
yeah.
Doesn't the ends justify the means? And I'm like, hell no. And see, the problem, of course, is that the European will never allow us to be on so-called equal footing with them in their world, in their society. Never allow it. All this week, I've been watching CBS News. I watch CBS News, and I think I mentioned this before in a program, because the other programs, that, you know, in the mornings. I don't like Gayle King. Believe me, I don't. That sister's so compromising, but they have decent, and they put on news. They don't have the fluff features and the promotions of movies and stuff like that, you know. Although they did promote the Lee Daniels and Sister Day, the new movie on Billie Holiday, and the fact that the government was after her because of her song "Strange Fruit," which they did not like because it reminded them of the fact that they are killing us. They don't like it put in their face, You know, the European can't stand to be confronted with the realities of what they've done because they want to believe. That's just like the Caucasian lady, Robin DiAngelo, who talked about white fragility. You know, I always say that the Caucasian suffers from a number of things, and that is, as Franz Fanon said, cognitive dissonance. They believe they're superior. Ain't a damn thing we can do or say to prove otherwise. And then, of course, there's hegemony, which is what's mine is mine and what's yours is mine, you know.
Right.
And then there, of course, is the Caucasian fragility. You know, I don't want to hear about us stealing people's land. Aren't we good Christians? We gave the world, you know, the benefit of Christianity. We gave the world the benefit of capitalism and all this kind of stuff because they don't want to hear of the wretchedness and the evilness that they have done. And she did these workshops coming out of things that were happening with Trayvon Martin and all the things that were happening at the time. And when she was explaining, and she was doing these workshops to these Caucasian people, and she just realized that they didn't want to hear the shit. They did not want to hear it, you know?
Right.
You know.
You know, and that's you bring that up, that remind, you know, because my thing is math. You know, my company, all this math, and, you know, offering math tutoring,
mm-hmm.
Talk, and a little bit of, you know, consulting at this point. And, you know, because I'm trying to push to be like, Baba Baruti, and, you know, and them with the independent school they have, I'm trying to get to that level and provide that type of conscious education for mm-hmm. our people. And Wakeza and Ife Majimoyo, also down in Atlanta, and
right.
other people throughout mm-hmm. the Marcus Klein and other people. But, you know, it makes me think in terms of mathematics. Another thing that we often see is like this kind of sick or, mathematical equation where, you know, it's like if the ends justify the means, then that means there's like a net positive, right? So it's like, yeah, those things were bad and they were unfortunate, but we've done more good for you than, or you're in a better place. You know, you're in a better
right.
place anyway.
Right.
We've done more positive than negative. And again, that's like this, that's the implication. And that's one of the reasons why, like, you know, I always promote, you know, mathematical mm-hmm. clarity and, you know, developing mathematical competency. Cause when you can see things through that, like, mathematical lens, then it's like, you really see how, what they're really trying to do and how the math can model the social relationships and the social realities that they try to promote. Like this idea that's like net positive, like, well, you know, it's more positive than good. So,
right.
You know,
it's just like,
you're cool. You should be happy.
Yeah. It's just like, you know, yesterday. It's just like yesterday when they had the hearings on reparations. They had some mm-hmm. Negroes, one of them being Herschel Walker, you know.
Yeah, I heard about that.
You heard about that. Yeah. They had some Negroes challenging and against, you know, I tell you, they have a plethora of Negroes in this society, and they've always really had. And I can just name a number of them and the sad, sickening mindset that they have. And with glee do they make these pronouncements and challenges against us. With glee, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah, I just hope that, you know, I want to look more. I do want to look. I'm not really mad at Herschel Walker because I'm at the point where I don't care about those type of Negroes. I'm just like, you know, if you don't, if, at this point, I'm like, if you don't want to be down, it's cool.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I think earlier on in my life, mm-hmm. you know, that would be triggering for me, and mm-hmm. I would be like, you know, well, you know, why don't? What do you mean? Like, you don't care about black people, or you don't think racism exists, or all these types of things. But, you know, at this point, I'm more like, you know, I know these things are real, and I know that we have a strong team. So when I sat back and took account of that fact that we have a strong team, that African people generally have a strong team, but this team is not for everybody. Everybody doesn't
right.
think that we can win, so they don't want to be on the team. So I would devalue the team if I begged those that didn't want to be on the team to try to be on the team. So
it's a
like,
good analogy.
Okay.
It's a good analogy. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah, you can have that opinion. You don't want to be down with that? Okay, mm-hmm. fine. That's on you.
Yeah.
I do want to research it more because when you say that, I think about I think about Jackie Robinson, but I don't want to say that that's on par with what, you know, how the government kind of positioned Jackie Robinson years ago to be at odds with Paul Robeson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I want. Right. I think it was different, and I know Jackie Robinson actually, you know, regretted that, and he was vocal later on in his life mm-hmm. about, you know, how the position he took. But you know, I definitely hope. I don't want anybody to say that those are the same things. I don't think they're the same thing. That just came to mind, like when you mentioned Herschel Walk, I just was thinking about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right?
But yeah, but another thing you said I wanted to comment on is about, you know, the movies, and I think we as a collective have to come up with or establish, and I'm sure that many of us have already said this, but I think as a collective we have to make a general rule that whenever Hollywood makes a movie, we should just have very low expectations for it. Number one, in terms of its historical accuracy, or at least it being told from a perspective that benefits African people generally. Number one. Number two, it should motivate us to study more on our own.
Right. You know, right.
Let it be that. Like, okay, you're putting out a movie on, you know, that features Fred Hampton. Okay, cool. Now this is motivation. I mean, we should have been doing this already, but there's so much we need to study. We may not have gotten to this, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is motivation for us to really study the Black Panther Party. This is motivation for us to really study Fred Hampton. This is really motivation for us to study that Chicago community.
Yes.
And people like Bobby Wright. Because when he mm-hmm. had when the community university was going on in the 60s, you know, and, you know, Bobby Wright was there, like, teaching, and Fred Hampton and many of the other young Panthers were his students. You know, there's that connection. There's that genealogy.
Yeah.
So it should motivate really, you know, do that reading and do that study. And I think when we watch these movies, we shouldn't watch them with the goal of being represented properly. We should watch them as see them as propaganda tools that we can analyze
mm-hmm.
and try to see how, okay, this is how the enemy is trying to kill us.
Right. And that's right. How I've always said. In fact, my daughter said, Dad, you just can't go to a movie and watch it for the entertainment. You're always looking for subliminal messages and what are they saying to us and so forth. You're damn right.
Yeah, you got to do that.
You got to do that.
That's got to understand it. We can't sit back and just relax. Yeah.
Well, you know.
I mean, maybe something Holly Greenma might make. Holly Greenma or his wife, you know, something they might make. You know, we can mm-hmm. kind of be more trusting. Hey, this is going to be on point.
Right. But everything coming out of Hollywood, you got to, you know, when you watch it with a scrutinizing eye, you know, what are they really saying? And just like, you know, the Judas and the Black Messiah is being told from the perspective of the traitor. It's being told from that perspective, you know. And we got to look at every movie that is about us. Even I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, Lee Daniels' movie with Billie Holiday and her mm-hmm. challenges against this government targeting her because she had put that information out. But, you know, every movie, in fact, they're making a number of movies coming up there. Wendell Pierce is playing B.B. King. There's a number of movies coming out, and of course, they're biopics. And of course, in Hollywood, they have what is called artistic licensing, you know. So they add things to the movie that are not factual, that are not true, or there's a twist of the truth to it, you know. That's why I agree with you. You know, when you find out a movie is coming, do some research on the person who that movie is about. And what the incident's about, so you can get a more clear historical perspective as you watch it. Oh, that didn't happen. That ain't how it goes. But you got to understand that you know, very few of the movies that we see are independent, are solely produced by us, for us, and distributed by us. You know, movies cost a lot of money to produce, millions of dollars, you know, millions of dollars a lot of times that we don't have, you know, and even if we do, sometimes we don't get the story right because, you know, many people have problems with, you know, Malcolm X that Spike Lee put out. And there's other movies that are supposed to have been, you know, more or less biopics. But I think that's something that we need to look at, you know.
Yeah, and I think in addition to that, what you're saying, I agree with that. And I've been thinking a lot about, you know, movies and Hollywood and whatnot and how it ties into how, you know, Black History Month has been co-opted by the mainstream and by this, you know, Western power structure, this, you know, white controlled government, white controlled corporate media mm-hmm. and how, you know, movies are used as, like, while I can appreciate our people our people trying to go to support, you know, and see a movie about that features, I'm going to say features, right? Because I don't think it was really about Fred Hampton, but it featured Fred Hampton. I see some value in that. But at the same time, I think many of our people, you know, just even back in 1992, when Malcolm X came out, or any movie about any black person that we feel that there's a general consensus that we should study and we should teach our children about, the movie becomes a substitute for serious study.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's problematic.
That's problematic. I
and
agree.
I think back to my elementary school experience and my middle school experience and my high school experience. I mean, even though I went to neo-colonial schools, neo-colonial, you know, oppressive schools, benefited in some ways from going to them. But overall, I understand the politics of those institutions now, looking back.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, maybe you had this experience too when you were coming up in your school experience.
Yeah, I came up in the 50s, man. I came up in the 50s and 60s. The only people that were talked about in our history was Booker T. Washington and George Washington Carver. You definitely were not going to talk about Frederick Douglass. You ain't talking about nobody who resisted. You ain't talking right. about, you know, Armentia, Sister Armentia, you know, Harriet Tubman. You ain't talking about them. You ain't talking about any, and you had no history prior to captivity, because ancient Kemet was Egypt, and that was Caucasian.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So when you come up in the 50s into the 60s, in fact, when I was in high school, in the middle, latter part of the 60s, we marched out of high school. And it was an orchestrated event because a number of schools, high schools, did it. We said, we, you know, right after lunch on that particular day, we all marched out for Black History, you know, to have some kind of Black History to be implemented into the school system, you know. Mm-hmm. And I remember
Did you have the experience of, like, you know, in your classes, right, whether it was a history class or whether it was an English language arts class, where you would read a book? And then at the culmination of reading that book, then you would watch the movie or the movie version of it.
Right.
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 I think a lot of think back and reflect on that. That was my experience, where we might have read Sounder as a class. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
And then in the reading the book and going through all the discussion questions, and we taking the quizzes, and we took the unit test on it, did the vocabulary and everything, and just kind of studied and analyzed the book. Then we get a reward on a Friday. You know, the teacher wheels in that big old fashioned TV that was to the cart with the wheels on it, right?
Yeah.
So that was like the reward. But now, it's like that reading part, you know. And I think that's a valid aspect of this schooling system, you know. Mm-hmm. And many negatives, but there's some positives that we can work with and benefit from, and that our children can benefit from. Even though we still need own independent schools, that's no excuse to just give up that work. We definitely know own independent schools, but now in reality, outside of the school education system, now it's just like, we just skip the reading, I'm gonna just go see the movie. And
yeah.
It's just like, then you have feeling like, oh, I know about Harriet Tubman. How you know about Harriet Tubman? Oh, I went to the movie. I went to the movie. I know about Malcolm X. How you know about Malcolm X? I saw Malcolm X the movie. It was on Netflix. What do you mean? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't read his autobiography. I didn't study any of his speeches. I haven't printed out the Ballad or the Bullet or Message to the Grassroots and really did that analysis and sat in community with other brothers and sisters and really grappled with his ideas and his ideology. I haven't done none of that. I don't need to, because I watched the movie. Like, and that's such a very American thing.
Yeah,
right?
It is.
You know, and then there's like these, you know, a lot of the slavery movies, chattel slavery movies that started coming out, 12 Years a Slave, Django Unchained, you know, people flock to those, start going to watch those. And then it's like, oh, I know about that experience now. No, you don't. No, you don't, brother.
Yeah, not
like,
for them.
You know, you haven't read anything. You haven't read any of Douglass's autobiographies, of which he wrote mm-hmm. three of them, three mm-hmm. whole ones. You know, a lot of these other different, you know, works that document and done analysis on the chattel slavery experience. Mm-hmm. But it's like, well, I went to the movie, so I'm cool. You know what I mean? But and it's like, at times I wonder, and I was having this conversation with my good brother, Mike, that I told you is a firefighter that I was going to introduce you to.
Right, yeah, please do. Yeah.
Is it sometimes better? It gets into the issue of representation. And again, this ties into Black History Month. Like, when is representation a problem? I think sometimes representation can be a problem, because sometimes we'd be better off of them not making a movie about us, right? Because if you make the movie, as sometimes if you make the movie, but you give me a skewed version of who I am and who our people are, then you could be worse off than if you never even heard of that person.
Exactly.
And I think this is something we got to debate about.
Yeah.
As a community, we got to debate about this,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm. Because that
sometimes it is,
because that
sometimes
movie
it's represented, because, but sometimes it's bad.
Right, because we don't do any further research than what you have seen. Now that is planted into your mind, and you believe that is what the case is. But listen, my brother, we're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk more about the importance of our history, this being the month, you know, and how this should be about helping to instill confidence in who we are as we continue to prepare for our liberation, self-determination, and sovereignty for us as a people. And that's what's important. So, brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. I'm talking today with Brother Akil Parker out of Philly. You stay with us. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays, where every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, this program, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., all times are going to give our Eastern times on Monday evening from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, Public Affairs Programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Jahad Ahmed, followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Maria Kamban and her daughter Nataki Kamban. That is followed by from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. On Thursdays from 7 to 9, Melanin Live with Chief Lance Jones and Sister Benisiwa Ayan. And then on Friday, at 8 p.m. on Friday, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. So check them out this evening. And then tomorrow, Saturdays from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then at 7, from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. And on Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Once again, on tomorrow, on Time for an Awakening, go to timeforanawakening.com and you can hear the conference, the eighth annual State of Africa Town Address, the State of the Africa Town Address. A lot of good information starting at from 1 p.m. tomorrow to 4 p.m. From 1 p.m. tomorrow to 4 p.m. A lot of good information, a lot of good presenters, the State of African Town. And of course, also the Pan-African Federalist Movement. And that's going to be at 6:45. So you can listen to one and then after that, listen to the other. Okay. If you go to the website and listen carefully, I'm going to repeat it twice. www.cbpm.org. cbpm.org/ PAFMNORAM. That's PAFM, Pan-African Federalist Movement. NORAM. If you go to that, to hit that link, that's right on that webpage, and then bam, you'll get right into the program. Just going to be just that easy. Just that easy. All right. Once again, we're talking with Brother Akil Parker out of Philadelphia. And we're talking about the importance of our history and how we can make it a tool for our liberation, a tool for our sovereignty. Brother Akil.
Yes, sir. I think other things. So we were talking about, you know, the movies and how we should respond to the movies. And I think, you know, and I've been guilty of this in the past, too. And this is an adjustment that I have to make. Instead of using so much energy to be as critical of the movie, kind of accept it for what it is and use it as, you know, use the movies as like instructional material. Like I said earlier, like, okay, this is what they're trying to tell our children. And so this is what we know we have to defend our children against. And also let it motivate us to do our own research.
There it is. Exactly.
Also, it should motivate us to lend support to those of us that are in the African community and in the part of the African collective that are focused on and specialized in those type of creative works. And perhaps like, and again, we, you know, we live in a capitalist system where, you know, everything costs money. So we got to put our money, you know, where our mouth is. We say, well, I don't like what, you know, and I got to do this too. So this is self-directed criticism. It's like, if I don't like what Hollywood is putting out talking about our people, then I got to find those Black people that are, you know, loyal and beholden to the African community that are willing to create, you know, literature and create movies and plays and write screenplays and do, like, you know, movie shorts that are going to be more accurate and more appropriate. And we got to, like, you know, cut some checks, you know, and say, okay, we'll organize some people to get together to say, listen, we need you to make this this movie about, you know, we want a movie about Fred Hampton that's really about more focused on what the mission of the larger Black Panther Party was, or what was going on in Chicago, and where there's no compromise that has to be made with a hot studio, right? You know, and that, I mean, because that is what it is. You know, that's not to critique the people that were involved in putting it together that were trying to promote an honest portrayal of Chairman Fred Hampton. But we understand the limitations. So the way to avoid that, it's kind of like with schools. Like, we can either make compromises in the neo-colonial, white-controlled public schools and charter schools, or we can go build our own.
Exactly.
Or support those that are already in place, in position, like doing that work on a daily basis. Like I mentioned some of them earlier, you know, some of the people, you know, across the nation. And some people don't have as much of the fanfare, as much of the publicity as some other people, but, you know, that work is being done. And we will see the dividends of that paid in the future as time goes forward. It's inevitable. You know, we will see the benefits of people that have been doing the work to create and maintain those educational institutions and those educational spaces.
Yeah,
because our communities are going to reflect it. You know, definitely going to reflect it.
Yeah, I agree, and that's why Carter G. Woodson was so adamant about. You know, he said, "We have no worthwhile traditions, no history. We'll become a negligible factor in the thought of the world, and we stand in danger of being exterminated. The people without history is like a tree without roots. What happens to a tree without roots? Exactly, it dies, and so, as well as the people. And the fact that we keep establishing our history with us in our captivity, which is a tremendous error. And even today, we keep doing it. And let me tell you this. You know, when I was working in the school system when I was a firefighter in Milwaukee on my off days, because we work one day on, 2 days off, and I would go to schools on my off days and work with our people. And I would always tell them, I'm going to give you information here that you're not going to get in this institution, in this school. You know, that was my main purpose. And I would ask anywhere from the, I worked with a few grade schools, didn't work with too many middle schools. Middle school was very tough. But I worked a lot, and this is the public school system, of course, a lot with high school students. And I would ask the question, particularly when February approached, because that was a serious month for me to give a lot of good information out historically. But I would ask him, why is February our history month? And nobody hardly knew. They would say because of Martin Luther King. They would say because that's the month they gave us. They couldn't say because of Carter G. Woodson and the history of Carter G. Woodson. They couldn't say that he went all the way to Harvard University, the second American African to get a doctorate degree from Harvard University, Du Bois being the first. And they couldn't say that in his travels that he never seen the history and achievements and accomplishments of our people. So he dedicated his life. He never married. He never had children. He dedicated his life to reclaiming, recapturing, restoring the history of our people to present it to us. And in 1926, he started Negro History Week,
right?
You know, to honor Frederick Douglass. And let me tell you another irony of 1926, because 1926 is the same year that Drusilla Dungy Houston wrote The Wonderful Ethiopians of the Ancient Kushite Empire. And she has, to me, one of the most dynamic quotes that is still an issue with us today. She said, out of ethnology, geology, paleontology, archaeology, I have come upon an irrefutable arsenal of facts that not even Harvard or Yale or even cowardly scholarship in our race can dare not refute. And the dynamic portion of the quote is this. She says, how can a leadership point a way forward that is utterly ignorant of the past? That's why our leadership is so damn weak, because number one, a lot of leadership comes out of the church, and the church is anti-history, because the church is, the theology of them is not historical. It is not, because the history challenges that. So they said, well, no, I don't want you challenging my theology. I don't want you challenging my Jesus. No, then I'm not going to believe that. You see? So, you know, it's problematic for us that our leadership cannot point the way forward because we're ignorant of our historical past. You know, we believe, once again, as I stated earlier, that our history belongs in our captivity, and we thank Caucasians for providing us and helping us. And now we shit. Yeah, right. Let me stop.
So So what this also does is it highlights the propaganda war that we're always involved in. And Black History Month is in right in the middle of that propaganda war, the propaganda over what Black History Month should be versus what Woodson intended for it to be and what many of our ancestors intended for it to be. And you mentioned Yale as one of the, when Drusilla Junji Houston talking about, you know, institutions like Yale. I remember when I got introduced to Stolen Legacy by George J.M. James, and an introduction or the preface talks about how that book was banned when it first was published in 1995 at Yale University. So when I read that, I said, oh, this is something important.
Right.
I can't loan it out to nobody.
Like, that's right. Because you know, hey, Brother Q, because you know if Caucasians don't like it, we better check it out. And if they do like it, I would diss it.
That's one of the things. Another thing I learned from Bobby Wright, he said, anytime all white folks don't like you, you're doing something right.
That's right.
Like the liberals and the conservatives hate you.
That's
like,
right.
Oh, because you know, a lot of black conservatives don't like them, but the liberals love them.
Yeah.
You know, so the, you know, conservatives love them, but the liberals hate them. So it's like, okay, I still got to look at you sideways.
That's right.
But you know, when all the white folks don't like you, you know, you must be doing something right.
That's right.
What Bobby Wright said.
That's right.
But again, in terms of that propaganda war, I think, What our children have to understand is what, because in the school, like you said, in the schools they won't get it, and I'm fine. I'm at a point where I'm fine with that. I understand that this is again, it's a propaganda war. It's a war, so all is fair. Like you know, there's no love. There's no love here in this war that's going on. What was Woodson's goal? I think that many of us kind of we buy into the narrative that Western society gives us about Black History Month as if okay, this is the time where we're going to recognize you. This is the time where we're going to allow you to be represented. We're going to, you know, Google is going to change their background and put some black people on it. On the major networks, Netflix is going to, you know, have the Black Lives Matter collection. You can see the so-called black movie produced by white, you know, white production companies and white film studios. But it's, we call it black though, right? But Woodson's thing was, it's not a time to isolate our experience and look at ourselves only in that week, which he originally started. It's more like a halftime. So if I do the sports analogy, when I talk about this, like with my own children, or when I talk about it with anybody, it's like, you know, it's halftime at the basketball game or the football game, where you reflect on what we did good and what we did bad in the first half. And we reflect on, okay, what's our plan so we can win by the end of this game. So it's not about, okay, and again, that's like the whole Representation Matters game is weaponized against us because we just want to be seen. We just want to be recognized by white folks in ways that don't empower us. Where we're just, oh, well, look at, let's put these black people on TV. Let's put these black people on Netflix. Let's put these black people on YouTube. Let's just show them. It doesn't matter what they're being. It's like the disruptive child in class in the third grade classroom, right? You know, for whatever reason, he or she just wants attention. They don't care how they get it. They can get the attention from getting a 95, getting the highest test score in class, or they can get attention from cutting up and acting a fool and disrupting the learning process, and so nobody can learn, right? They just want attention. And unfortunately, because we've allowed attention from white people to shape and inform our self-esteem for so many of us, that whenever we're so thirsty for that attention from them, we'll take it any way we can get it. Instead of saying like, no, I don't. First of all, I don't need your attention. That's number one. And number two, if you want to give me attention for this, I don't want it under these circumstances. You know. So Woodson is saying like, this is like a halftime for us to regroup, and it's not really a time to. Okay, we can celebrate our achievements, but it's not really that type of celebration because the game is not over.
Right.
Right. We celebrate at the end of it. We celebrate when we win. We haven't won yet. But I think that's part of the problem, where a lot of people are really just happy during Black History Month because it's like, you know, they feel like they've won because the goal is just to be recognized by Europeans. And you say, oh, well, y'all gave, like, it's in the language, y'all gave us a month. And wow, you're gonna actually do something for Black History Month. You know, wow, like you're recognizing me, right? It's like, oh, it's like Ralph Ellison. Oh, I'm not Invisible Man no more. Like you're recognizing me, right? And these Europeans know that that's all we want. You know, it's like even with electoral politics, it's like, well, we just want Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and the Democratic Party to tell us that y'all would have won, all were the reasons that we won the election. And that's enough. That's it. Like, okay, we're happy now. Yeah,
exactly.
You're right. You better recognize fact that it was black women and it was black men that went out to the polls and got y'all elected and got Trump out of office. And that's all we want. And now you can do whatever you want for the next 4 years, and we might, you know, vote you in office again for another 4 years. And that's all people want, you know. And that's part of, and that, you know, they use Black History Month to kind of, you know, consistently push that narrative that
right. It's
about recognition and it's about us celebrating now, when in fact it should be about us like kind of closing ranks and saying, okay, what are we going to be doing for the next 11 months until the next Black History Month? So mm-hmm. Hopefully we can report back in next February 2022 and say, okay, well, what did we gain, you know, and how have we moved forward? What type of independent institutions have we created for our children? Where are our farms? How many more farms do we have? How many more grocery stores do we have? What type of distribution networks do we have? What type of have we implemented more vertical integration in terms of our black businesses? Because I have a black business, but this is self-directed criticism, and I think more of us should think on these lines if they choose to. My black-owned business is not black enough, and the reason I say that is because I do tutoring. Math tutoring, and I use certain resources in order to provide that tutoring. However, I use virtual instruction, virtual tutoring. I have to use Zoom. Zoom is not a black controlled company,
right?
I use my laptop. I have an Apple laptop. Apple is not a black controlled company. So again, that's why I say my black owned business is not black enough. So the goal should be that everything that we have black owned businesses. A lot of the Europeans support black owned businesses. Mm-hmm. They don't have a problem with it. You know why? Because they understand the game. They understand economics. They understand finance. They say, listen, you can start that restaurant in your community. That's cool. Mm-hmm. And we can say, okay, support black businesses during Black History Month. That's cool. But in your restaurant, that salmon that you sell might be the best salmon in the city. You still got to come buy it from me. Mm-hmm. So you got to still buy it from that white man.
Yeah.
Right? And that's just that's the state of things now. And that's a constructive critique in terms of what all of us have to do. Like we all have as
well,
black.
It's the same thing here.
We haven't even thinking about that.
You know,
get to the wholesale level,
yeah,
and the manufacturing level, so we can be fully all out black owned. Right.
Right.
We're doing a good first step.
Yeah, I would love for that. I would love for that to happen, because like even here, you know, I'd love to push BB Atumi, you know, has a method of broadcasting this thing. I'm on an Uber conference and Centova and Google and all this other stuff. There's none of it is ours. You know, all the things that make this happen are really not in control by us. And of course, there have been times things been down, and, you know, some may argue that at an inopportune time that it happened, that, you know, maybe they said, we don't want this broadcast. But listen, brother, we got some callers on the line. I got a caller here. Wants to get in. 414-507. 414-507.
Hey, Brother Oshie, how you doing?
Hey,
and Brother Akil.
Hey, Brother LaRue.
Peace. Hey, I got one thing, speaking of black history, that we really not getting black history. What we're getting is individual history of black people. And that's the problem, because we don't get the big picture. And then by getting the individual history, what we want to do as people like me on an individual level is compare ourselves to these individuals in black history. And we're nowhere close to achieving, at least I am not, achieving the level that they achieved. So what kind of perspective is that for me? But the thing about it is that we need the black history should be black history, which is the big picture, the collective. And when we talk about black history, just we should leave the individual out of it so that we can get the big picture. That's my statement.
All right, Brother LaRue.
I think we can, I feel your comment, brother, and I think that we can leverage the individual achievements. I do agree with you, though. I think the problem with honoring and only focusing on individuals is that a lot of people, they already have a rugged individualistic mindset, because that's how a lot of us have been conditioned. And I mean, even once upon a time, I had a rugged individualistic mindset, but I was fortunate that I was brought out of that, you know, by certain elders and certain scholars that I was exposed to. So I was fortunate. Many people don't experience that benefit, and they're never brought out of that, right? But I think we have to figure out effective ways to leverage those individual accomplishments and those individual achievements. And also, when we're talking about those individuals, in terms of our narratives and how we tell our children and tell other people about, okay, well, what Frederick Douglass did, or what T. Thomas Fortune did, or what Booker T. Washington did, or what even what Malcolm X did, we talk about it and we talk about them in the context of a larger community, right? Because what westernized historiography loves to do is create these, like you're saying, create these like supermen and these superwomen, right? And that, whereas like that sounds good in theory, but what it does is to the typical person, I would say to any person, it often can be discouraging, because then you say, oh, well, wow, this person was flawless and was, you know, superhuman, and I'm not superhuman, so I can't do what they did. When in fact, they were ordinary people. They may have done extraordinary things, but they were ordinary people.
Right on.
And I think we, in terms of how we have the conversation, we have to always talk about the larger community that that individual was a part of. And I think that's necessary. That's very, that's mandatory. We got to start doing a better job of that.
Exactly. And what's happening is that I think for many of us, it ends up we can't see the forest for the trees. And so we don't really understand our position as a people, because we're looking at individuals, and that individual is supposed to represent the people, which is a, in a way, it's almost like a distortion.
Yeah. Listen, we got some other callers. Thank you, Brother LaRue. Stick with us, dear brother. We got some other callers. 602, good afternoon.
Yes, brother.
Hey, yes, you ain't calling while you forgot my name, huh, Brother Marcus?
You know what I was saying? No, I was doing something, I got distracted, that's why. Brother Parker, you know, I just want to echo the sentiments of Brother Parker. You're right, you know, the Negro seeks white approval, you know? And what you have to remember also is that white man not going to let us use his media to destroy him. See?
Right.
So I wouldn't even go and support these movies. See? Because you're still supporting back the same white man again. You see? He put the trash out and then we go sit down and watch it. He's still getting rich. Just like Black Panther. See, the hero really in Black Panther was Killmonger.
Ashe.
But you see, they twist the story around and made him the villain, you see? So these people, again, like I said, they're not going to let us use their media to destroy them. And I don't think we're ever going to get a level playing field with these people in this country. You see, because they control too much. Even when we set up our little industries and little enterprises, they come in and destroy it. They just destroy it, you know, find some way to destroy it. So I think our best thing is get whatever tools we can get here, get whatever capital we can get here, and go build where the mass majority of our people reside. That's where the strength of our people is. It ain't in America. You know, it ain't going to change here for us. So, you know, that's just my thoughts, you know. After 465 years, we're still here trying to figure it out with these people. We're wasting time. We're going to get another 100 years. You know, I saw an article the other day. They said since 1865, we only had 11 black senators in this country. 11, over 150 years. We spend too much time trying to get along with them when our issue is really trying to get along with each other. Anyway, Brother Oshie, thank you.
Thank you, Brother Marcus.
And Brother Parker, keep on keeping on.
Right on, brother. Thank you.
Thank you, brother.
Yeah. 410, good afternoon. 410-215. It made me just want to listen. Okay. You know, what's interesting, you know, and we're in our, 410, you.
Oh.
Go ahead.
Yes. I'm sorry, I didn't realize you were talking about me. Okay. I was just listening and trying to, give support when I can. I'm
Akil's
mom.
Hey, mom. Oh, okay. This is beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah. Good discussion.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
So I'm going to mute myself so you can answer as calls as possible.
Thank you very much. All right.
So real quick though, I do want to kind of, I mean, there's so many reasons I have to shout out my mom, of course, but one reason that's directly tied into this conversation is kind of like, you know, why I think, why I am the way I am, and why I kind of think the way I think, is because my mother is, you know, she's very humble, so she doesn't really talk about this that often, but she actually studied at Hunter College, and she took course with—
Oh, in New York.
With Dr. Clark. With Marimba Ani. And the reason that that's relevant to me is because, like, when I was young, I was maybe like 3 years old or so, when she was working on her degree, she would take me to class with her. So while I can't say that I vividly remember sitting in those classrooms, listening to those lectures, I know I was there, and I'm sure that, and I'm glad she did that.
Oh, I bet.
That kind of implanted kind of in my psyche kind of these ideas. So like when I started reading Yorugo years ago, I'm sure that it made sense to me, a lot of the things that Marimba Ani was talking about, because of the fact that when I was 3 years old, I was sitting in that classroom listening to her talk about those ideas. And, you know, when later on in my life, when I was studying Dr. Clark's books and watching his lectures, they made sense to me because as a 3 year old, those were kind of implanted into my psyche at an early age as part of my own socialization process. The same way that, you know, we have young children that, you know, kind of grow up on Disney movies, and at 3 years old, they're exposed to Disney movies. And that's something else we have to be careful with as well, because Disney, again, implants ideas into our children's psyches. Mm-hmm. And we have to defend them against that, kind of, anesthetize them against it, or, you know, provide a filter for them so that, you know, they don't grow up and become adults that still want to promote those kind of ideas that maintain our own neocolonialism. So definitely want to shout out my mom and thank her for listening in. And thank her again. I thanked her before for that, but, you know, for taking me to Hunter College on those days. And again, she, you know, this is just what Black people do. Like, you know, she didn't have daycare. So it's like, okay, you got to come to school with me, you know? And I appreciate that. And I see how, you know, Black women have always had to do what they had to do in those situations, especially to secure education. And, you know, even now in the night school program that I teach in, it was a sister that just had a baby, and we're virtual. But, you know, the other night, you know, on Tuesday night, we're in class, and we're talking about the Pythagorean theorem, and she's trying to do problems. And I hear, you know, the newborn baby, the baby's like 2 weeks old. Yeah. You know, she's like, you know, holding the baby, trying to rock the baby, you know what I mean? So the baby will stop crying. And she's sitting up there trying to do A squared plus B squared equals C squared. And I respect it, and I love it. You know, and I'm here for it.
Right on.
You know, and I'm
right
here to support that in that way. And that's just something that our people do. And again, that ties into Black History Month, because those are the stories that we should be talking about. And that, I think that's what Woodson wanted. Mm-hmm. And even our ancestors before Woodson wanted us to be talking about that and talking about these things in that way, as a way to uplift our people. Right. So, and not just try to squeeze it into February. Okay, well, we'll take these first people to do this in a white control space, and take this first person or this first person that made a whole bunch of money, you know, and you know, and whatnot.
Right.
I think we need to have some of those types of conversations.
No doubt.
About our history.
No doubt. Because like I said, what our history should be about is 410. You want to say something, Mrs. Parker? Because if you want to say something, I got a number of calls on the line.
I was trying myself so you could take other calls. But no, I don't have anything.
Okay.
Anything else? So nice chatting with you.
Thank you very much. And thank you for listening. And please continue to do so.
Oh,
I appreciate
it. No problem. All right.
Peace. Thanks,
Ma.
Love you.
Same here.
All right. She got it in. But one of the things that, you know, that it becomes very problematic for us is that, you know, we only get a chance to focus on our history at this time. History should be with us constantly. We should always understand the importance of instilling the knowledge of ourselves on a, you know, daily basis, you know, looking at what we have done. And, you know, cause, I mean, tremendous odds that we have done things and invented things and created things, you know. But, of course, this society is constantly put into the minds of our people that we were running around a jungle with a rag up our ass and a bone through our nose, never created a civilization of any kind, of any note, of any worth. And many of our people believe that. In fact, to this very day, you have a number of our people who are just very ignorant of the history and achievements and accomplishments of our people. And a lot of them don't care to know. They don't want to know because they've been so whitewashed. They've been so Caucasianized, you know, and their belief is that, you know, if it weren't for the benevolence of Caucasians, you know, and we should be thankful. You know, you had that one. Hey, man, you had this one legislator down in Florida who was happy. Remember that? You heard about that one?
Yes. Saw that on it.
Yeah. Man, I wanted to go down there and slap her ass. You know, she was so thankful that because of our captivity that we got out of Africa, because I could be in Africa worshiping a tree. You know, I'm so glad that I'm worshiping Jesus. And in fact, what she wanted to do, if you remember the article, she wanted to make it a law that in the schools that you had to have so much time to be indoctrinated through Christianity in the public schools, you know. So I tell you, man, it's our situation, and I always looked objectively. Even though I say things and people may perceive them as being pessimistic, but I am optimistic, you know. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing this, you know, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, you know.
Yeah, you gotta be optimistic to do this. And another thing, you know, that we accept, and again, I keep invoking the ancestors. Another thing I learned from studying Dr. Bobby Wright is, you know, a recorded interview that I got my hands on from like the 1970s. He said a lot of people, we might not be supposed to see the change and improvement in our own lifetime, you know, but we got to do the work anyway. Because I think that's what burns a lot of people out. In terms of doing what we would call liberation work, is like, you know, you do so much work and put forth so much effort, and you're like, man, like, I don't think this is going to change in the next 20 years or 30 years. It might take 100 years, 200 years. So people say, well, you know, I want to see the change. You know, I want to eat the fruits of my labor. But then, you know, it resonated with me because it was like so fundamental, but it just made so much sense. It's like, you might not be supposed to be able to see it. So it's like, maybe we don't actually get free for another 100 years, mm-hmm. but if many of us don't do the work to push us toward that, then maybe in 100 years it won't happen.
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
Still got to do the work, even mm-hmm. and be willing to accept the fact that mm-hmm. you know, maybe we won't see it with our own eyes, but maybe our grandchildren, our great great grandchildren will see it, and that's what it's about. It's, you know, being able to pay it forward and do that work for something that you won't even be able to tangibly touch, mm-hmm. but just knowing that, you know, other people will benefit from it. You know, has to be enough. You know, it's got to be enough.
So, brothers and sisters, anybody who's on now, if you hit star twice, you can get in on the call. Remember, our number is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. I'm on the program today with Brother Akil Parker, educator in the Philadelphia area. And a young man that I met, oh man, I'm trying to remember exactly which conference I met you in. You were a panelist.
We were at the Locks conference, and I wanted to come holler at you because I was moderating. I was a co-moderator on a panel.
Exactly.
You were at the Locks conference up here in Philly.
Exactly.
A couple years back.
Exactly. And I think I met you at another conference.
It was probably at ASCAC.
At ASCAC. It was ASCAC. Yes, it was.
Yeah, 6-7 years.
Yeah, you know, I've always been impressed, and thank you, Mrs. Parker. You have done a beautiful job. He's a fine young man, believe me, and thank you for listening as well. But you know, the thing that bothers me, you know, in doing this work, and just like you say, you got to do the work to realize the fruits of the labor, you know. Is the fact that time is of the essence. It's just like when we talk about the Pan-African Federalist Movement. And, you know, there's supposed to be some kind of thing about 2063, that there's that the unification of the African continent. I don't see it happening. In fact, the Pan-African Federalist Movement says to unify the continent before 2030. And to me, I'm down with that. In fact, they talk about in 2023 having a conference on the continent saying, this is what we are going to do. Laying the gauntlet down saying, we're going to unite. All the tribalism, all the mysticism, all the bullshit, that's going to be kicked to the curb. Now, we're going to respect your customs, traditions, and so forth, but we need to unite as one African continent, the United African States, so we can realize our full potential as African people. But because we've been divided and manipulated and undermined, the European, the Chinese, which are huge, the Koreans, the Arabs, and whatever, have been ripping us off and continue to do so as long as we stay divided. And I would think that for brothers and sisters here who have the wherewithal and the mindset, must understand that we need you on the continent. If you don't want to go, I understand that. But if you want to support that, please do by contributions or other means, you know. But Africans on the continent and Africans in the diaspora, now is our time. And if we don't seize this moment, we may not be here. Because you got to understand, and I know you do, and I know many of the listeners do, that we are dealing with an entity, Europeans, who are evil. Who are evil. I ain't talking some individual Caucasian that you may know, you know, that's cool with you and so forth. I ain't talking about him or her. I'm talking about the collective mindset of Europeans. When they came out of that dark age, that the medieval age, and they said, we may war amongst ourselves, and they do because they are very warring people. They said that we're going to come together on those who are outside of us. And then when they went around the world claiming everybody's stuff in the name of, when they had intercourse with the women that they encountered through rape and realizing that the offspring did not look like them. This is where Frances Cress Welsing said she had her epiphany, realizing that they are subject to genetic annihilation. And you see it happening right now. For the last 20 some years, they've been experiencing globally negative population growth. For every two that die, only one is born. You know, so these are a reality. And so that's why, hey, that's why you probably see all these interracial commercials you see on TV. You always see a Caucasian man and a sister. Every now and then a black man and a Caucasian woman, you know. But I'm saying is that this is the dynamic that we're operating under. That's why, you know, under reclaiming, recapturing, restoring our history and instilling in us. That's why, to me, educating our children, independent of the school system we may send them to, or more importantly, developing our own school system, particularly at an early age. Because to me, if you instill that in them at an early age, you can send them to high school. You can send them to a college, university, because they know who they are and they know why they're there. You know, they don't give a damn about being liked. They don't care about being liked. They're there to get everything that school has to offer. You know, so that's why this history and this history month is so important.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. Indeed, man. Like I said, man, it's halftime. You know, it's just time to just take a moment to regroup and just reflect on what we've done successfully. But again, I guess the issue is like what the end game is. Because again, keeping with the sports analogy, like what is the end game?
Yeah.
For many of
us, that's a good question. What is
the game to win? And even with that, I guess that's not the right question. Is the end game to win? It's how do we define winning?
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of us have to be clear, because again, and this will save us a lot of stress and a lot of headaches and a lot of heartache, because we often go into situations and go into spaces with the preconceived notion that we all have the same definition of winning. Whereas, you know, you have, you know, a Negro assimilationist and a black nationalist have two, they both want to win, but they have two very different definitions of what winning looks like.
Right.
And again, that's another conversation for us to have. Cause I remember, Reverend Albert Klieg.
Shrine of the Black Madonna.
He was on a panel and he said something that was very profound to me, at least. And he's like, you know, because the question was posed, can a black nationalist and a so-called integrationist work together? And he straight up said no, they can't, because we have different goals. Now that was profound to me. I haven't fully accepted it, but I think it's something that needs to be analyzed. Mm-hmm. As a community, because a lot of times we find ourselves in spaces, and I think that's something we got to figure out. Like, can we work together, and how do we work together if we can? And if we can't, then we got to just, you know, be firm and say, okay, well, we're, you know, the nationalists need to go over here, and we let the integrationists do whatever they can, and hopefully they don't hinder what we're trying to do.
Right.
But I don't have the answer to that. I don't have the answer to that, but I think we do have to define mm-hmm. what winning looks like to everybody in the space, because oftentimes, in order to, like, not ruffle feathers and not be, quote-unquote, divisive and, you know, all these types of things, and in order to promote, like, this idea of unity, where we think that, and I think that the idea of unity that many of us possess is also can be a problem, because we end up thinking that within the United States, 40 million black people have to all agree and on the same thing. And I don't think that's ever been the case, and I don't think that ever will be the case within any group of people. You know, even groups that are powerful and control their politics and economics and their culture, I don't think everybody agrees with them anyway, but, you know, we can get into, like, you know, what Karanga talks about in terms of operational unity.
Right.
You know, operational unity, I think, is an important thing, and that we can use strategically in our political movements. But, you know, we got to talk about, like, you know, how do we define winning, you know? And once we define winning, I think that ties, again, back into Black History Month in terms of how it's promoted. Because for some people, winning just means, okay, in the month of February, like I said earlier, white people are going to recognize me.
That's winning to us.
White people are talking about black excellence on the local news programs and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And then it was like once that happens, okay, mm-hmm. we've won. We can relax now. But then for some of us, that's not what winning looks like.
Right.
Winning to us looks like, okay, we have our own independent infrastructure that we control, that we decide when it's on, and we decide when it's off. Not some other group of people that have demonstrated through history that they collectively hate us, you know. You know, we have independent schools where we teach curriculum that, you know, will enable our children to be responsible handlers of power, as Dr. Clark talked about, mm-hmm. and they'll be trained to use their intelligence to solve our problems and not just have to, like, kind of sell their labor to the highest bidder. Mm-hmm. So we can go solve white folks' problems or the Chinese people's problems or the Arabs people's problems. They can be educated to solve our own problems, right? You know, that's what winning looks like. But again, we have to do this critical analysis and talk about what is winning to you. Because a lot of times, you know, and I've been guilty of this. You know, we go into these spaces and we think, oh, we all here, so, you know, we're all black and we all, like, complain about the white man, but a lot of us, like, it's like one thing I learned from Kwame Ture, like, just because we're against the same thing doesn't mean we're for the same thing. And a lot of times we make that assumption, you know, because some people complain about white folks because they just want to be recognized by white folks. They're mad. They're like young children throwing a temper tantrum. Like, no, you're going to recognize me, white man, Mr. Charlie and Miss Ann. You're going to recognize me. Mm-hmm, you're going to mm-hmm. recognize my humanity. My life matters, right? I don't care about none of that. Like, I don't, that's not why my complaints are made. And actually, my complaints are only made at this point in order to expose, you know, what we're really up against. I don't have an expectation that collectively that group of people will change. I have no expectation, almost no confidence at all. And I don't think they necessarily need to. I'm looking more at us in terms of what we can do, because we can control what we do, you know. And it doesn't have to be, like I said, it doesn't have to be 40 million of us.
No, it doesn't. And that's the thing. No,
it's a concerted group of us, you know, a small group of us that can, and our efforts can grow exponentially. And again, that's another math connection, because when we understand the math concepts dealing with exponential growth, exponential decay, how something starts off small, mm-hmm. and then the next thing you know, it's like a trend, right? It starts mm-hmm. off with one person doing it, and then from one person, then you got five people, and then it's still small, and people say, "Oh, that'll never catch on," and the next thing you know, you got 5 million people doing it. And then you wonder, like, well, how did that happen? Through the concept of exponential growth. It's exponential. Everything starts small. Mm-hmm. You know, they, as people say, as historians will say, like, any significant change in the history of humanity always comes, it doesn't start from everybody
right.
doing it at once.
Right.
It starts from a small group. Mm-hmm. Everything starts from a small group. And this is well documented. But because of the, again, my math background, and my belief in the reality of mathematical concepts, and mathematical formulas and functions, I apply those to social situations and social realities. So I see how, okay, well, if I can solve this equation on paper and it makes sense and the left side equals the right side and everything balances out, I can also try to apply this to human behavior. And that's all, you know, that's all the algorithm is. I mean, there are plenty of algorithms that we use that deal with, well, I should say that we're exposed to or subjected to in social media that affect our patterns of behavior. And all that is just mathematical formulas that have been used to kind of either track our behavior or influence our behavior in certain ways. Mm-hmm. And that happens on a daily basis, and most of us don't even realize it.
Right.
So math is key. So I look at math as being able to, you know, if there are math concepts that make, again, if they make sense on paper, on somebody's, you know, pre-calculus homework, then it should make sense in terms of how we view our lived experience, you know, as human beings. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's another thing that gives me optimism, you know, out here as we're doing this work.
And I tell you, you know, it's a noble work that we are doing, no doubt. And it's a necessary work that we are doing, you know. And to me, our end game is sovereignty. Our end game is independence. That's what this program here, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. Our motto is Pan-Africanism or perish, unify or die. And to me, there is no other discussion. Everything else is moot. You know, our end game is just that. And the question becomes, how do we achieve it? What are the things that we must do to bring us closer to that goal, closer to that end game of independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty? How can we do that? You know, when we're bombarded 24/7, 365 with images and notions of our inferiority and images and notions of our inability to come together, to even have a discussion like this, you know, constantly, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Well, we're about ready to wind down, my brother. I want you to give me some closing remarks, you know, and then we'll schedule another time to come on at your convenience, man. I really appreciate it. I always appreciate our conversations, you know.
Yeah, it's been long. I'm glad some of my time freed up on Friday. You know, last semester I was teaching a class on Friday at the same time, so I couldn't do it then.
Yeah.
But, it's good to be back on and, you know, having the conversation with you and with the community.
Yeah.
That's you're a part of and that, you know, is a part of you. I guess my closing remarks is something I didn't really get to bring up is, you know, we talk about, I've been thinking about this lately. We talk about building independent schools and independent infrastructure. And that's my son. We talk about that a lot and it's a tall order. And I know some people probably hear the conversation from, you know, Black nationalists and Pan-African nationalists and they say, oh, well, that sounds good. You know, start independent schools. Yeah. Okay. You know, It's not an easy task.
No, it's not. Right? Right. It's not.
It's done easily. But what I ask is that just at least everybody that is not already invested in that work, just at least start to imagine it. Right. Because imagination goes a long way. Because in terms of a lot of things coming to fruition, oftentimes things start with an imagination, with something being imagined. I mean, and that's the power of movies and media, right?
Right.
It implants an idea into your imagination. And then somehow, a year later, 5 years later, 10 years later, 20 years later, you're living a certain way and living a certain lifestyle and promoting the idea that was planted into your head as a 3-year-old or as a 2-year-old, right? Because it's in your imagination. So I ask that people, in terms of independent schools and a network of independent schools for our children, even if you feel like it really can't happen, because you feel like, wow, if you in your mind, you know, believe that Black people could not develop these institutions and run these institutions to rival or take the place of the schools that we all went to that were controlled by, you know, the white power structure. Even if that belief is not within us, just start to imagine it. Start, and then from the imagination, you know, comes the conversation. And I know we can imagine because a lot of us, you know, like I grew up listening to commercial rap music. And you know,
well, how did you like that piece I played for the break?
I like that. I've heard you play it before.
Right, because I played it because it's the sound of Philadelphia. It's
I grew up. I grew up listening to the commercial rap music, and it planted ideas into my imagination, ideas and goals of becoming rich and becoming wealthy, and you know, having women and having gold chains and having luxury cars, and then those ideas became normalized, and then so then I would kind of find myself in spaces where this was the reality. And then when I got older, it's like, okay, then I bought this luxury car. Well, you know, I took out a loan from a bank, and the bank let me drive the car while I was paying them back for the loan. I never owned a luxury car.
That's speaking the truth.
Yeah, the bank always owned it. I was paying them more than what it was worth so that they would let me drive it around. You know, that's another conversation we should have about, you know, what they call financial literacy. We
right.
start telling them. Talking about the reality and some of the mistakes that we make as adults.
Well, you know, there's a lot of topics that we're going to go over in the months, in the weeks and months to come, my brother. You know,
yeah,
there really is a lot of topics. Because I really appreciate you coming on and talking about our history today, how important it is in the lives of our people as a tool for our liberation and our sovereignty and. All the other things, man. I thank you too for your mother listening and contributing to the program as well, man. So, Brother Akil, I appreciate you, my brother.
Thank you, brother.
All right. Once again, let me recap that piece, or not recap, let me state the piece that Mama Nabantu was talking about in terms of the Pan-African Federalist Movement tomorrow. And, once again, she said it's going to make it easier for you to go to the website and click onto the website. And once again, the website is www.cbpm.org/PAFMNORAM. That's PAFMNORAM. Click on that and you'll get in. And of course, the program that is happening on Time for an Awakening tomorrow, if you at 1 o'clock tomorrow, the Pan-African Federalist Movement is at 6:15 p.m. This program that is going to be, which is the State of the African Town, the eighth annual State of the African Town, is going to be on TimeForAnAwakening.com. That's TimeForAnAwakening.com from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern. All right, family. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and sure in hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful weekend. Enjoy yourself, be safe, and hope you'll be back with us on Monday and throughout the weeks. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahodiye. Bivahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a good day. Blessed day. Peace, family.
Peace.
Peace.